Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Fu followers around the world. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. Before we start, a quick note about the show. The Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast is now in its fifth season. On the show, we talk to people from all over the world about their involvement in martial arts movies, whether they be actors, directors, producers, stunt performers, and fight choreographers. We also chat to writers and experts on the genre. We are currently releasing new episodes every 2 weeks on a Monday. You can follow the show on social media. We are on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. And we are on Facebook and Instagram. The name there is at Kung Fu Movie Guide. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Acast, SoundCloud, and wherever else it is that you get your podcasts. If you are interested in supporting the show, you can now donate via PayPal. All donations are greatly appreciated and will go a long way to helping us to continue to provide content for you guys. Visit kungfumovieguide.com for all the social media links, donation options, contact information, and to sign up to our monthly newsletter. You can also read all the latest martial arts movie reviews via our website. Please do send me any questions or feedback you might have regarding the show via the email address hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, thank you so much for checking out this episode of the show. We have an exciting action-packed double bill for you today. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers everywhere around the world, wherever you are tuning in, listening to this episode of the show. Thank you so much for checking it out. My name is Ben Johnson. I am the host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. I do hope that wherever you are in the world, you are keeping well and you are staying safe and you are getting by as best as possible despite everything that is going on in the world. It's a very challenging time for a lot of us, so I do hope you're hanging in there and you are keeping well. We have a very exciting double bill for you on today's show. It's a stunt special with not one but two great guests. Later on today's show, I will throw over to the conversation I had with the martial artist, stunt coordinator, fight choreographer, and second unit director, Brett Chan. You will be familiar with Brett's amazing work on television shows like Marco Polo, Iron Fist, and Warrior. He is also the stunt coordinator on Snowpiercer, which is available on Netflix now. It's based on director Bong Joon-ho's 2013 film. Brett is also the fight choreographer and the stunt coordinator on the CW's reboot of the classic 1970s TV show Kung Fu. Olivia Liang will be taking over from the central role, made famous, of course, by David Carradine back in the original series. And we cannot wait to see what the new version of Kung Fu looks like when that does finally land on the CW network. Whenever that might be. Everything's all up in the air at the moment, as you can imagine. Warrior, on the other hand, is returning to our screens in October of this year, October 2020. Warrior is, of course, based on the writings of Bruce Lee. It will land on the Cinemax network in the USA in October. The trailer is out there now, and I will be sure to put a link to that trailer in the description of this episode. I really enjoyed the first season of Warrior when it came out last year. So, as you can imagine, this conversation with Brett does contain quite a bit of Warrior chat. So, I do hope you enjoy that. That's coming up later in the show. Before I throw over to Brett Chan, I would like to share with you the conversation I had with Jawan Dace Candice. She is a stunt performer who has been working in the business now for nearly 2 decades, and she is also the founder of Stunt Performers of Colour, or StuntPoc. If you want to go online, the website is stuntpoc.com. StuntPoc is a film and TV website which lists qualified ethnic stunt performers and coordinators across the USA and Canada. Jawan Dace set the website up a few years ago now to help address the need for more diversity within the stunt world, and she has become something of a spokesperson within the industry, calling for changes to be made. If you're inspired at all by this conversation, then I would very much recommend watching the webinars that she has been hosting and adding to her YouTube channel. She's done one on diversity, and there's one about being a woman in the stunt world. And her latest one, I think, is about surviving the downtime. I think we could all do with some survival tips with regards to that at the moment. I will be sure to, of course, put links to all of those webinars in the description of this episode. Jawan Dace comes from a wrestling background originally. She moved to Los Angeles in the early 2000s to perform with Women of Wrestling. She wrestled under the name Doubt a Lot of Pain, which is awesome. She then made the move into stunts and currently has over 140 credits to her name on IMDb, as well as acting credits in movies and television. She has moved mostly away from fight work, and she does a lot of car stunts now, which is something she very much specializes in. And it was great to chat to her about her experiences working in the industry. So I will stop talking now. I will be back before the Brett Chan conversation just to tell you a little bit more about how you can support the great work that is going on at StuntPoc. I will also provide the contact information for Jawan Dace. But before that, let's now go over to my conversation, which was recorded over the internet with the great stunt performer Jawan Dace Candice. Run StuntPoc. Could you just explain a little bit about what that is and why you started it as well?
It's StuntPoc, Stunt Performers of Color, and it consists of all of the stunt performers from ethnic backgrounds, from Black to mixed race to Asian, Hispanic, Middle Eastern, and all of that above, because a lot of us are mixed on the site. And I started it because there was a lot of coordinators who would call me, you know, when I was in LA looking for, you know, a Black girl who could do this, or, you know, Asian girl who could do this, because I've been in the industry, it'll be 18 years this year. Yeah. And even after moving here to Atlanta, I would still get calls. And so then I would hear things from other ethnicities, you know, Black, Asian, whatever, saying they always say they can't find Asian this, or a Black girl who could do this, or a Hispanic guy could do that. So after talk from, you know, the feedback from, you know, hearing all these people and experiencing it myself, where they're saying, oh, I can't find this. And I'm like, well, I know such and such. I decided to create a resource. And at first, it started off as just a database, just listing them and showing their pictures. Then it grew because all of a sudden Canada called and was like, can we be a part of this? Because we have the same reason here, where they're saying there's not enough stunt performers of color. So I decided to revamp the website and make it searchable, so that way they could just enter the skill, motorcycle female, you know, and all of them will come up from in North America, from Canada to the United States. And that way they can narrow down from there, because it was a huge discrepancies and talk about the lack of diversity, even on set, even when it comes to if there's a scene where there's an explosion scene and they needed 20 people, you know, and the lack of diversity that came with that, you know, where you know, stunt people, performers were needed. So that's how it all got started, you know, February 2018 it launched.
And it's proved very popular, has it? Quite a lot of people signed up,
Yeah, we have about 200 plus stunt performers, and that's including the stunt coordinators signed up.
And you've sort of become sort of an ambassador, is that the right word? I guess of,
the go-to person. Yes, the go-to person, it kind of came as a... in default, you know what I mean? I became the default.
Do you mind that though, being that?
You know what? I don't mind, because I'm such a passionate and activist person, and I believe in equality and diversity in itself. So I actually don't mind it. You know, I felt like it was my calling, and I took the opportunity, and I claim to be that person. Yes.
Yeah. And the stunt community seems very tight. It seems like people look out for each other. It's very much, I get the impression, it's quite a close-knit kind of family. Is that fair to say?
Our union is the SAG-AFTRA union over here, Screen Actors Guild AFTRA union. And stunt performers only make up less than, I would say, 6% of the union. So we're a small niche, and we all pretty much know each other per se, or is small enough to where it's 3 degrees of separation. You would call someone that someone would know someone. So we're pretty small, even though we're spread out now, because probably like 8 years, 8 to 10 years ago, we started filming, you know, outside of Los Angeles, New York, you know, New Orleans, Atlanta, Vancouver, you know, even over there in the UK, we're filming.
Loads of big movies get
loads
filmed
of things over there. So we're, you know, so now that we're filming all over, and we don't have to really reside in Los Angeles anymore.
Historically, the stunt community has been predominantly white, predominantly male, predominantly straight, cisgender. Does that sound accurate to you? That's the experience
When I first joined, I could count the number of black women who were doing stunts on one hand, who were actively working stunt women. And then I would go to sets, and it'd be, you know, 20, 30 stunt people. And, you know, I may not see any stunt performers of color driving, you know, especially when it came to driving and motorcycle stunts. There would be all white men, you know, and then if they had one person of color, it would be a male, you know, and then if they had, you know, to have a woman, it'd be a white woman, you know. But even with women, there's a lack of diversity, you know, just if there's 20 drivers, there may be one female, you know, out of 20, you know. So I just feel like in America, we're such a melting pot here that, you know, if you're filming a film in New York, it has to represent New York, you know. Now, if you go to a region, say, for instance, Montana, and it's a small town in Montana where it's predominantly white, and they're shooting a scene, then I could see where there's a situation where, okay, this scene should call for, you know, mostly white people in the scene, which I could understand. But I think it's the old mindset, and even the younger white people who are coming up in the industry, they're saying the same thing. It's just a change of the mindset, the change of the culture and diversity that, you know, we got to change in this culture.
But as you say, you started out early 2000s in the stunt world. I mean, that's 20 years. Over two decades, you must have seen a change, more stunt people of color coming into the industry, or not so much?
You know what? I do see a change. There's a lot more stunt performers of color coming in. But as far as being hired for, I feel like the only time we work is when we're doubling someone who is of color. You know, because there's a lot of roles out there for stunt performers that are ND, which is called nondescript roles, like you're driving the car.
Nondescript roles. Can you explain that a little bit? Because that was a term I wasn't familiar with. So
Nondescript is called ND. ND roles are stunt roles where pretty much you play yourself in this action scene. If there's an explosion, if we're reenacting an explosion of people run out of a burning building, when you see film and television like that, those are not all background people. The ones that's by the fire and all that are all stunt performers. Those are ND spots.
ND stunts could be anyone, couldn't they?
It could be anyone. It could be that's and And most of the time they call their friends. They call people who they know, which are all pretty much white men, unfortunately. You know what I mean? So I feel like those are the spots that I feel like that needs the change, is the indie spots. You know, let's get some diversity in there. You can see women running out of there. You can see, you know, women and people of color running out. You know, it's got to be diverse, you know, like, and it's not natural if something was on fire that it'd be all white men. It's just not natural in America anymore that that would happen, you know?
And in cases like that, is the onus on the stunt coordinator to make sure that that is an accurate, diverse representation, or does the buck stop at the producer level?
The producers and the UPMs leave. They hire the stunt coordinators that they trust that will get the job done.
Yeah.
That's what they do. The producers are so in charge of everything else and not just stunts. They trust that this stunt coordinator is going to hire the best person for the job. They're not caring who's over casting, but it takes, because the producers are not there really on the day a lot of the time when they're the scenes. But it takes the actors, like what's happening nowadays is that Anthony Mackie, who was Falcon in the Avenger movies, he looked around and was like, where's the diversity? He even looked around. If you Google some articles, he even calls for a change, because you see in the actors and directors are looking around going, wait, this is supposed to be New York. What is going on here? Or this is LA. You know what I mean? It doesn't have a good representation of, you know, stunt performance when it comes to, you know, stunt roles like that. We still having men double do stunts for women and put on a wig.
Yeah, this is called wigging. That's another term. This is when men put on wigs. That still goes on, does it?
Yes, it still does. It still does. It doesn't happen around me. I think they, you know, I probably call them out. But sometimes when you're doing heavy action scenes, you're not around the actors. They're doing it in second unit, which means all the action takes place on this stage. And then the acting goes on this stage. You know what I mean?
So
a lot of times they get away with it because nobody's really around when they're doing it.
Do the stunt performers themselves feel empowered enough, though, to actually challenge the stunt coordinator and say, look, this is not on what's going on here. You must hear stories like that. And what happens to the stunt performer if they do call out this?
Well, they don't work anymore. Unfortunately, they get blackballed. They get called out and they tell their friends, don't hire this person because they call me out, you know, things in that nature. It's really sad. But I always tell the person, don't be afraid to do it, because those are not the people who you want to work for anyway, because there are a lot of good coordinators out there too. You know, I can name, you know, the ones that I prefer. If I could work for them the rest of my life, I would, you know, if they had some support, because they're respectable and they know, you know, diversity and, you know, all of this. I mean, we're not trying to take nobody's job. We just want to be, you know, we're not looking for charity. We just want to work also. We want a place in society and we want to be able to be included. We're looking for inclusion. We're not looking for to take the job.
Attack!
Black Panther 2018, that felt like a real turning point in many ways, not just in terms of diversity and representation on screen, but I know behind the scenes as well, that was seen as quite a, you know,
I think
a big
step. It won so many awards because they had a lot of diverse people behind the scenes in costumes and hair, you know, that that did all of these wonderful things, but that was a once in a lifetime, I felt like.
Really? That was my question. You worked on that movie.
I worked one day, actually, because the other thing about that, too, I was doubling a girl on there. And even then, they wanted darker-skinned black people because they felt like, I mean, behind the scenes, the producers were still white, you know? So they felt like they wanted, what they thought was true African was to get darker-skinned black people for these shots, you know? So on Black Panther, so even when I doubled the lady, she was darker than me, but they had to paint me down a little bit, which is normal with black people. We come in so many different shades. I've been darkened, I've been lightened, but they're just, the actors are just happy to have a black person double them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh, well, she's black, so this is amazing. Yeah, you can put on a couple of coats, you know? But a lot of them were like, well, we want it is no darker, you know, people where they're all working here. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I was the perfect size and height for the girl. So yeah, I mean, it had some wonderful things that happened. And I think that for the most part, everything was wonderful about it for that particular movie. You know, if we could, you know, but it shouldn't have to take an all black movie for black people to work. In my opinion.
Yeah. You touched on this term painting down just then. I watched one of your webinars and I was shocked that this is still happening.
In that webinar. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So could you just explain what painting down refers to and that this is actually something that is still going on?
And you probably heard of it because you watched. It was from Angelica Washington.
That's
and
right.
And it happened to her on a show in 2017. Yeah. She's currently starring in Stargirl, and she had two black stunt doubles that they found on Stunt Pop for her for that. And I think that's what made her speak up, because she's like, they're here. I had two wonderful ones on Stargirl. Painting down is when they just basically, and at that time they told her, and this is in 2017, it's not like in 1991, they told her that they couldn't find any black women in Los Angeles who were stunt performers.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles. I mean, so they painted this girl who was not black, and we still not knowing who it really is or the coordinator. No one's releasing. I have an idea. Angelica told me, but I'm not allowed to say at the moment.
Sure.
They basically painted her black, and you could see in the picture that she didn't look like, you could tell she was painted on, and the awkwardness of the smile of Angelica in that picture, but she had to take the picture because that was for to be released later, which happened. You know, it was like I'm going to take this picture now, but we're going to talk about this later. You know, so it's painting someone down to look like, even down to the hair, they got ethnic hair for her on the top. So, white people, you know, was doing it in the 50s and 60s in movies to portray us, and they're still doing it now. They you know, they feel like it's okay. We can't find anybody. Let's just get white. So the purpose also of Stunt Pot is, if for some reason you can't find black, if for some reason, then you kind of go, there's other colors on there. There's Hispanic people with darker skin, you know, Asian people, even Cambodian on there that has darker skin, because she's mixed, you know, she's Asian and black, you know, so there are options on there.
It's such a lame excuse as well in Los Angeles.
Very lame.
I mean, come on.
I don't know what goes through the head of white people who do that, because I could never, I'm mixed myself. My father's white, he's German, and my mom's black, but I could never look at my skin tone, double a white girl, and I can't use that excuse where, oh, I'm half white, so I could double a white girl. They do that sometimes with actors if an actor is mixed. I've heard a girl say, well, I'm doubling Halle Berry's white side because she's mixed. You know, even though Halle Berry's skin is brown. Or, you know what I mean? But that's not, I mean, that's kind of like illogical. So in that case, if we're going to do that, I should be doubling white girls then. And then they look at me like, because my dad's white. I'm using my white side. So, you know, it's got to be fair on both sides. But that never happens.
It's complex as well, because I did read an interview with you where you said you'd doubled Viola Davis for something.
Yes.
There was a makeup process involved in that. Is that correct?
Yes. I did double Viola Davis. And Viola, again, she had, she told me when she started her career early, they had a white girl double her. So she was the one who was like, oh my God, I'm just happy to have you because we're the same height, same body type. I'm just happy to have a black girl to double me, you know, whether it takes a few shades. She was just happy to like see that there were black people who actually do stunts, because she never heard it. You know what I mean? Because a lot of these actors, they go by what they tell them. Oh, it's not too many. No one wants, you know, black girls are not doing this. So she was just happy to, you know, Queen Latifah the same way. She hires me all the time because she's like, I'm just happy they have black girls who do stunts.
Following the Black Lives Matter protests, and I know that shone a light on a number of issues, one of which was structural racism that does go on across organizations, business, etc. And Hollywood is certainly not immune to this. There was that diversity in stunts initiative on social media. I don't know if you saw that. That was doing the rounds.
I saw that.
Yeah, I do. I have that. And we have another webinar coming up this Wednesday. And Shahab Rubari is the lead of the movement.
He started that.
He started it. And he's getting slack himself because they're looking at him like, why are you trying to help these people? You know, he even told me he's getting slack for that, which is sad.
Really?
But he sees it himself. You know, he's actually Middle Eastern. And so he's like, you know, they're, you know, he comes from Europe, so he's not used to this American culture where you get attacked for wanting to help people. You know what I mean? So he's like,
that's so weird.
But he sees what's going on, and he's like, you know, we need some help.
What were your thoughts though when you saw that social media campaign? Because I know, you know, I think the gesture is a good one, and it's great. People go on Instagram and they like and they post and comment, etc. But these things only work if there's actions that can happen as a result of these
things.
Yeah,
you know what, at first I was a bit apprehensive. So, you know, because a lot of these, you know, especially in the climate that we have here, Ben, you know, with all of this going on with the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff like that, I was wondering if, you know, is this a jumping on the bandwagon type of thing, because all of these little movements are starting. But I actually sat and had a Zoom conversation with Shahab, and I felt his heart. And I feel like he genuinely is concerned about this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He genuinely wants to come up with plans to for change in our stunt industry, to get more diverse stunt coordinators, especially women, you know, and women of color to be stunt coordinators on set. Because a lot of times when you have men coordinating, and especially if they coordinate an all-women show, they're not knowing the dynamics of stunt women, you know, as far as, do whatever. But we're like, okay, if we're running in heels, there's a special boot that stunt women need. You know what I mean? Things of that nature that you would consider as a woman, you know, coordinating female shows, or a Black woman even with their hair, you know, and the skin tones, you know, because a lot of them don't know about skin tones and about Black hair, you know, things of that nature. That's important. You know, it's a whole dynamic, you know. And the more we keep having these workshops and increasing the awareness, it's helping, I think, because it's bringing it to the light and bringing it to the table.
What would you like to see change?
I would like to see the stunt industry and SAG. What I would like to do is have our union back the movement and back Stunt Park, and actually offer, classes or seminars so we can obtain more information on how we can, you know, certain stunt casting can be more diverse, and also set up a program to where we could get a change for stunt coordinators, you know, females and women of color, you know. So I would like to see more executive, not just legislative, something that you write, but executive movement from this, our union, on this. And I feel like they've been slow on it, or, you know, really, you know, just apprehensive themselves on it. I would like to see more action put behind our union.
Yeah,
to make
from the top.
From the top, yeah, because it's got to happen from the top. Like, you know, we've been fighting for change for 20 years that I know of, but it takes the union and someone from the top to make it happen, and also our allies who are white stunt coordinators to make it happen too, to continue to talk about it.
Have you experienced racism firsthand within the stunt world?
Oh, yeah. I'm still going through it now. I mean, I'm still, oh, my God. Just the other day, I was, you know, when it comes to me driving, I feel like I'm a really good driver. But and they just ignore that. Like, here's my driving reel with all of my crashes and my high speed chases. And they just ignore the email or pretend like they didn't see it. And then I don't get the job. And then it's filled again, you know. I feel like a lot of coordinators I don't work for is because of racism.
I mean, you do have over 144 credits on IMDb, so
still get questioned about. It's amazing how, when it comes to Black women specifically, I'm a woman and I'm a Black woman. I still get questioned about my skills because they just don't want to acknowledge it. You know what I mean? And these are people who still question, "Have you taken a driving course?" And I'm like, "Have you seen my driving reel?" You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand. You know, these are people who are still, to this day in 2020, are questioning my skills. And then I have a mentor, Dee Bryant, Dartney Bryant. She was in it before me, and she's the baddest motorcycle rider that I know, and in cars. And I learned how to ride motorcycles and cars from her. When I got in, you know, I was looking up to her, and she was my mentor. She still gets questioned, you know, after she's done so many shows with motorcycles. I mean, it's never ending, and they continue to call us to ask, we need a black girl who could drive or ride motorcycles. Okay, here we are. Is there anyone else? I mean, are we, you know, I mean, it's weird.
As you said earlier, Queen Latifah, I think, took you under her wing and you doubled her.
I did. After I did Bringing Down the House, and she won an MTV, you know, nominated for an MTV award for Best Fight for that. She was like, you're going to do all my movies. And she held her end of the bargain. I'm so honored for her. And it was on our fourth movie. I did my first four movies with Queen. Bringing Down the House, Taxi, Scary Movie 3, we shot in Vancouver. Then we shot Last Holiday over in, you know, Prague in Germany. And we had a conversation there. She knew I wanted to be an actor, that I moved to L.A. to be an actor. But she sat down with me and she says, hey, I wanted to be an actor too, but I rapped. Yeah. If you get my drift. You know what I mean? Yeah, to get in there, to cross over. So, and she's like, you're such a badass that is not to me. I don't see black stunt women, and I think you could be, you know, she's the really the reason that I came back to LA and I started taking driving courses. I finally got my motorcycle license in, because she motivated me to, you know, she said, you got to be good in this field. You got to open doors for others. So she has no idea that she inspired me to be a better stunt woman and to pursue my career, you know,
amazing,
as a stunt woman. So I give all my credit to Queen Latifah for that.
The roll call of people that you have doubled, I mean, Regina King, Oprah Winfrey, Jennifer Hudson, Whoopi Goldberg, Monique, like, it's ridiculous. Tyra Banks, like, you know, it's kind of amazing.
It's still surreal, you know, especially being on the set with them and getting pictures with them. And I'm like, these are people who I look up to, you know, these are people I still admire. Like, these are real people. So, I mean, I'm honored, but, you know, I'm so focused when I'm on the set and so professional that they don't see the, you know, the starstruckness in me. They see the work, and I think that's why they keep calling me that.
And do you feel safe on sets? Injuries, they do happen, don't they?
You know what? Injuries do happen, and that's a really great question, because it took me years to, you know, my first 10 years was about I'd do anything, you know, no matter how safe. I didn't even question it. I trusted everything. But now, seeing what I have seen and knowing what I know, if I don't feel safe, I'm not going to do the stunt. You know, you get what I mean? So you have to have a confidence in yourself to say, hey, I don't feel safe. I need the mark to be over here, or that's too close to the camera, or I feel like you need to be over here, or the director, he really needs to be on the other side of the car, or, you know what I mean? I feel like, but it took years to get to that point. It takes experience, and it takes years of being in the business. I'm grateful that I haven't had any serious accidents that took me out of, you know, out of the game from doing science, you know? Yeah. So, but I know what to do now when it comes to being safe. If I don't feel safe, then I don't do that, period.
We should say you've got some amazing acting credits as well. And I know.
Oh, I love acting.
And that is something you would be advising stunt performers who are coming into the industry to make you a fully rounded performer. Then acting is a really crucial thing. Is that something you would be telling people?
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know what's good too, what's helped me with my career, is because if you let the coordinator know that you have an acting background or some acting, you could get in the stunt performer or the ND spots easier.
Yeah.
Because they may say, okay, you're coming out the burning building, you're on fire, and they may want actors, the director may want you to say a line or two, you know, then it becomes an acting role. So I always tell people to take improv classes or just one introduction to acting classes.
Okay, ambitions then into the future. Stuntpock is really popular and the numbers are growing, are they, at the moment?
Yes, the number is growing. The interests are growing. A lot of actors and directors are following it now, so which is great. You know, so I hope to take it to another level. That's why I'm doing the workshops. We got a great reviews from the workshops, because not too many stunt performers, you know, we don't have workshops, you know, or webinars. Yeah. So I feel like this was a great opportunity for me to not just, you know, talk about, you know, the objects and not talk about diversity and paint downs, but just increase the awareness for all stunt performers, whether it's safety, whether it's storm coordinators, how to hustle, you know, as well as, you know, diversity and things of that nature. So I want to do more of those so we can help the community in itself.
Well, listen, you're doing amazing work. So do keep it up. And
thank you.
This has been great. Thank you so much for taking
thank
the time
so
to
much.
Talk to me today.
Thank you.
Dragon Fest.
Jawandace Candice there. Thank you so much, Jawandace. Really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed talking. Thank you so much for your openness and your honesty there. And for highlighting, of course, the amazing work that's going on at StuntPoc. StuntPoc stands for Stunt Performers of Colour. You can find out more about StuntPoc by heading over to the website stuntpoc.com. There is also an Instagram page at StuntPoc. Jawandace also has her own website, which is jawandace.com. She is also on Instagram. Her name there is at Jawandace. I will make sure that I add all the links to these accounts, as well as her IMDb page and her driving and stunt reel. I'll be adding all of those links to the description of this show and also to this episode's page on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. So yes, make sure you do go and support Jawandace. She is doing some very important work in the USA and Canada in helping to make the stunt world a fairer and more equitable place. And we very much commend her for her hard work. So thank you, Jawandace Candice. We will be remaining in the stunt world now for our next guest, which is the amazing Brett Chan. This was a blast being able to chat to Brett. Obviously, being a huge Warrior fan myself, and also discussing his amazing journey from stunt performer to fight choreographer to stunt coordinator and now second unit director. And it is only a matter of time now until we see Brett making those next steps into directing. Brett Chan is based out of Vancouver, Canada. This conversation was recorded back in April 2020, just a few weeks into the lockdown. Brett is part of HITS International, so that's HITS with a Z, H-I-T-Z. They are a collective of professionally trained action specialists comprised from all over the world, and they include second unit directors, stunt coordinators, stunt performers, fight and wire choreographers, horse masters, and actors. You can find out more about HITS International by visiting the website hitsinternational.com. You're also going to hear a little clip from the new trailer, which has just landed for Warrior Season 2. Warrior Season 2 is expected to land in October 2020 on the Cinemax network in the USA. We do mention the slightly uncertain future for the show, since it has been revealed that Cinemax will no longer be doing original programming, and shows including Warrior that were on Cinemax will not be making the move over to HBO's streaming platform, HBO Max. So despite the fact that the show is produced by people like Jonathan Tropper and Justin Lin and has involvement from Bruce Lee's daughter Shannon Lee, and also despite the fact that the show has a huge following already, once the second season of Warrior is up, then the show at this moment in time is currently homeless. There is a Save Warrior campaign which is doing the rounds on the internet. You can sign up to that. I am one of the signatories on that, and I've been sharing the link to it through our social media accounts. I will add the link to this show's description, but you can find it now by searching on change.org. It has been known in the past that when the future of a show is in jeopardy, sometimes, you know, if enough fans do go online and sign petitions, then that can influence certain networks to, you know, continue with the show. So that would be great. Look, it's the least we can do, and we all would love to see that show continue. So I would also say, if you are a Warrior fan, then do please check out the KFMG pod archive. You will find conversations there with Shannon Lee And also the show's stars Andrew Koji and Jason Tobin. All great conversations and great people. So go back and listen to those episodes if you haven't already via your podcast provider. Okay, that's just about enough from me. I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly and also provide a little bit more information. But until then, let me now throw over to my conversation with the awesome fight choreographer, stunt coordinator, and second unit director, Brett Chan. Been in the industry for so many years, and a trait that seems to follow you throughout your career has been this sort of stepping through from martial artist to stunt performer to stunt coordinator, fight choreographer, second unit directing. Like, there's a path there. Looking ahead, always moving forward, is that something that you mentally do yourself?
Yeah, there's kind of a technique a lot of people I know do. It's called manifesting, especially sending your energy up in the world of where you want to go with what you want to do. As long as you have a positive outlook and manifesting things, things will start happening. Getting into the business itself here is really difficult because, you know, you have a small select people that are doing it. And obviously, everybody wants to see you do well, but nobody wants to really see you do better than them. And it's not something that they project out there, but it's just kind of something that, you know, just subconsciously people, it's just human nature kind of thing. Like when they see you do well, they're like, oh, well that could happen to me, or, you know, but are you doing the right things to make it happen? Are you manifesting? Are you making those progressive movements? Are you progressing yourself? Or are you just kind of saying, well, this should happen to me, but you're not doing anything about it?
Yeah. You still find it quite competitive.
Oh, 100%. There are guys out there that are a lot like more talented than I am, or this, but it all depends on where they are in their mindset. So how they want to achieve this, do they want to work at it, or do they expect it to be land handed to them? There's also an area where the people are higher up, they'll kind of push you down a bit. So it's harder for you to make it up there because, you know, this person can be my student, let's say, and you know, the student always surpasses the instructor. I mean, the master always. So you can either embrace it and help them and help them grow. And then when they grow, I mean, you take self-satisfaction in that, and they inevitably, as they're good people and you've been good mentors from them, they'll kind of bring you up with them as opposed to stay there. Don't do anything. Yeah. So you stay above all the time. And that happens quite often in this business. So it's very competitive. But you'll see some of the guys who have really branched out and they would, you know, because of their skill, and not because they've been jerks about it or stepped on people to get to where they need to get. They just were just really good people. And I believe that if you are really, truly a good person, think good things will happen to you. And as long as you project that, you just keep your head down and you do what you do best, it gets known.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
With your fight choreography, you're willing to listen to, you know, ideas. Anyone's idea is a good idea as long as it works. Is that the sort of ethos that you create on your sets?
100%. I mean, the team that I bring in, like usually when I travel my jobs, I usually bring in guys from around the world. When I bring people in, it's not necessarily based on their skill. It's based on the fact that they're good, ethical people, and they're good people.
Yeah.
I don't care how talented you are. If you are a jackass, I don't want you on. Because what you just do is you just cause disruption in the whole team. because, you know, you think you're better than them. That's a big problem for me. So I'll take ideas from everybody when I'm doing choreo. I'll do the choreo first. I'll set up the structure. I'll set up the skeleton. I'll set up the outline. And I said, okay, I need this move to look like this, 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 this. And then I'll put it in. And the doubles, especially the doubles who are playing those characters, as long as they understand that where it's coming from story-wise and character-wise, then I'll take into account all what they're saying, because obviously they're playing that character, they're living that character.
But how do you come up against an issue where maybe you are dealing with an actor, doesn't really have an action background, maybe hasn't been going, keeping up the training as well? How do you deal with those types of challenges on a set?
That all depends on the collaborativeness of the producers and and the director. When I have actors that don't want to do anything, I had a show, I don't want to mention names, or but I think you guys would all probably know when I'm talking about it, that the actor didn't want to do any training. Yeah, in the very beginning, he did like 2 weeks of training. Okay, great. Yeah. And then afterwards, he didn't want to train. He didn't want to rehearse. He didn't want to do anything. Like, it was like really difficult. And then, you know, the directors come in. So, well, I want to shoot in this space. And it says, well, I can't really give that to you because my actor doesn't want to do anything. It's, you know, you want to look a certain way. And if the producers don't get on board and say, tell the actor, hey, this is part of your job. You got to do this. Then I'm stuck. So what I do is I'll just create hero moments. So we do the choreo, and it all depends on time too. Maybe the actor does want to do it, but we don't have time to rehearse with them or train with them. The budget doesn't allow it. So then I will shoot a previs essentially, but I'll do the whole fight, and then I'll just do the double, and then I'll pick certain moments depending how long the fight is. Let's say if it's, you know, X amount of beat, I'll pick like 4 or 5 moments where the actor can do a movement, 2 or 3 movements leading in and leading out, just like 2 or 3, and that would make them look good. Therefore, the way I shoot it would be double, 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 and then I pick the moments where actors 1, 2, 3, boom, pose, and you see it's the actor doing it. And then the cut seamlessly goes back into the double until the next hero moment. And those are generally what I have to do with certain TV, because, you know, our shooting schedules are like, okay, guys, this is like a 184-beat fight, but we have 4 hours to shoot it.
Yeah. How is Warrior to shoot? Do you get enough time on those scenes?
So Warrior, it was a dream job.
Yeah.
I mean,
we should say you're stunt coordinator, but you're also second unit director on Warrior, aren't you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
The actors, all of them, like literally, like I set up a training regime every morning. So you can come if you like, and basically, but all the stunties have to be there every morning. So at like 7 a.m., they're all there, and they all train for like an hour, hour and a half. Do an hour and a half of training, and then afterwards we do another hour of a different martial arts, because my team is comprised of people from around the world. So we have different martial arts coming in. We have different Chinese styles. We have Korean styles. We have like capoeira. We have just different things, boxing. Yeah. And so then we integrate them for an hour, and everyone just has a taste of it all. And then afterwards we get into choreo. But the actors all are there at like 7 a.m. They're all harassing me to be there. They all want to be there first thing in the morning training. They want to be there during the martial arts, and they want to be the choreo. Even if they're not in the fight, they just want to just be doing stuff. And you got guys like Andrew Koji, who comes in four hours every day. Whether he's filming or not, he's there training. Same with Joe Taslim, same with Jason Tobin, same with Dean Jagger, same with like Kieran Bue, same with like all of them. Diane Doan, like Olivia Cheng, they're all there, like training. Hoon Lee. Like, he's there before everybody, and he stays there to the very end of the day, just training. Wow.
That's quite unique then. You haven't experienced that on any of the shows that you've worked on yet then, Brett?
Well, an Iron Fist. I had, like, you know, Sasha Dewan, and our Bakudo character, and also Jessica Hennick. Like, they were there training 4 hours a day, every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those three were. And they had zero martial arts background. But if you're watching the show, you can see that who really put the work in for this thing.
It shows, doesn't it? In the end, it's worth going through that, isn't it?
Yeah. Producers were joining in the workouts. And on both Marco Polo and on a Warrior, Marco Polo was the same thing. You know, we had half the production team on it. I had catering. I had production. I had accounting. I had like everyone in the workouts room. I had like sometimes in the mornings, I had over 120 people in the workouts with us, because everybody loved it. And that was a great family atmosphere, so that I try and create.
With Warrior, because Shannon Lee's a producer on it, but it's also based on a Bruce Lee concept, surely the temptation there is to just go fully Bruce Lee on the whole thing. You know, choreograph it in a way that is very much indicative of the Bruce Lee style. But I think what's really clever about what you do in Warrior is, yes, there are nods there, but it doesn't overwhelm the whole piece. I'm guessing that was your approach when you first took on Warrior.
Well, I sat with Jonathan Tropper first, and yeah. Daniel Woodrow and Justin Lin. We talked about the tone that they wanted for it. The show, and Shannon Lee gave her input as well. It wasn't, I mean, because Bruce Lee's mantra is, you know, it's about hybridization of everything. It's not like one style. So their actors, like Andrew Koji, didn't want to be, because nobody wants to watch and see, oh, he's playing Bruce Lee perfectly. No. They want to see in essence of what Bruce Lee did. So we gave homage to Bruce Lee in a lot of in the films that he did and certain moves. But with regards to everyone else, no one else moved like Andrew Koji because he was the one that's playing the embodiment of kind of like what Bruce Lee would kind of move. But, you know, we'd have to adapt it a little bit. So that was awesome because, you know, Andrew didn't want to be Bruce Lee because it compared him and he didn't want to be, you know, no one wants to be compared to Bruce Lee. How could you be compared to Bruce Lee?
Yeah.
It's, you know.
You're a big Bruce Lee fan, I'd imagine, are you, Brett?
Of course, yes.
Yeah,
huge.
Yeah. So was this quite an honor then, I guess, to work on a show like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the time I was on a show called Skyscraper, but it was, you know, it is much different. And this one, I was second director. So when they pulled me over, I was like, yeah, I mean, anything to be attached to. And the biggest nod was Shannon Lee and John Tropper and Justin Lin and Daniel Santo, him and his daughter. She messaged me because Bruce Lee is her godfather, and they're, yeah. You know, she said that her and her father both agreed that what was done with Warrior was fantastic, and that Bruce Lee would be really proud of it. And yeah. Shannon Lee reached out, and she said the same thing, and her mother had said that Bruce Lee would be so proud of what was created on Warrior, and I was like, wow, and that's worth it right there.
The other Toms are getting restless. It's only a matter of time before they make a move.
The city is gonna burn. When it does, the blood will be in your hands.
It's our cue, boys. Let's go!
This thing between you two, we're all gonna suffer for it.
You and me, we have some unfinished business.
Well, when you're ready, come and find me.
I'm a huge Warrior fan. I think that show is fantastic. Eagerly anticipating the second season. I'm pretty sure you can't share too much about what happens in the second season, but tell us a little bit about season two. What was it like to film then? Let's talk about it like that.
Well, season one was people were just kind of other actors and characters. They're all just trying to, like, getting into their characters and really feeling it out. So season two, season two will blow your mind, Ben.
Yes.
It just, you know, because of now we've established what can be done and what can happen, and our characters are just really starting to really get juicy. So South Africa, shooting in South Africa was fantastic. They're also a newer film industry area over there. Not quite as big. They're just starting to grow now. So they adapted really quick. And I mean, I worked with some of the best people over there.
The stories come out now that Cinemax won't be, you know, doing any more original shows. So then that's sort of thrown Warrior in some kind of jeopardy. We don't really know what's happening after the second series. There's a huge following for this show. Brett, can you shed any lights on this? Do you know what's happening?
Yeah. Well, look, this is... Essentially, what's happening is Cinemax is now being dissolved.
Yeah.
HBO got bought out now by Time Warner, and now it's going to become HBO Max. HBO Max has a series of things with them, TNT, CW, and TBS, and all this stuff that's going on there. Warrior will not be on any other. Like, I guess some other companies had put a bid to purchase it, but I don't know, whatever reason, it just didn't happen. Stuart from Warrior Collective and I, and a few people like Shannon Lee and stuff like that, put together this petition to try and drum up some fan base.
Save Warrior.
Support to Save Warrior, yes.
Yeah.
So if we get enough, like, cause, like, there are certain shows like The Expanse and all that jazz, and the fan base came out so strong that they brought it back. So we're kind of hoping that that saves it and brings it all back.
It seems like it's a no-brainer. If the audience is already there, you know, why not continue it? But it's a strange industry, isn't it, Brett?
Yeah. Well, it's also not something that was conceptualized by Warner Brothers off the top. So that's one thing I would think, maybe because it's not original programming by them, even though it's already established. But it would be kind of a no-brainer because it is like already established. It has a fan base. We shoot it in South Africa. So, I mean, the cost that we shoot it for is not – like, I mean, to shoot what we shot in Warrior, to shoot that like anywhere else, like North America or Europe, like, would be, you know, a lot more. So what we're able to do and over there – and he just had to be part of it. It's literally the dream job. The actors are a dream. Fantastic.
Yeah. Are you ever surprised, because you've worked on some pretty high profile shows, when they get cancelled after a couple of seasons? Do you ever just wonder what the logic is sometimes in some of those things? I mean, how does that feel, I guess, when you get that news?
Yeah, it's pretty disheartening. Like, Marco Polo season 3 went away. I was just like, ah, and it was all it was all political reasons, and you know, the whole Harvey Weinstein thing, and
it was a Weinstein company thing, wasn't it?
So I mean, it's pretty disheartening when you have, you can obviously see when you watch out certain shows and you're like, this is terrible, how does this get lit? Season 4 or season 5, and are there actually people watching this? Like, it's it's crazy, but it happens. And I guess there is always a room and a genre for, I mean, there are like how many billion people in the world, so somebody must be watching it for them to keep it on.
Your kung fu expertise is just not good enough.
You started martial arts really young, is that right?
I was 7.
Your dad was your main influence?
Yeah, so I was born here, but when I was 6 years old, I moved to the Philippines for 3 years.
Sure.
And then I came back. But when I was in the Philippines, he got me into kung fu first. So I started doing a bunch of kung fu out there. And then I transitioned to karate. From there, we moved back to Canada. And then I just started doing karate here. So, you know, different styles. So Shotokan is my main from here. And then Shutoryu, Goju-ryu. And then I got my black belt in Taekwondo. You know, Bruce Lee is all about hybridization and learning new things. It's not always good just to stick to one. So, and that's what I started doing. You start training in different things, and Kali and kickboxing and boxing and Muay Thai and, you know, Krabi Krabong. And you start doing all these different things that, you know, and if, what that does is it just changes how you move as a person. And how you think. Many martial arts have a certain way of thinking, and for what Bruce Lee brought to the world of martial arts, I mean it's great, because now we're no longer, well, this style is better than this style and this style. No, this style contributes to this and this style contributes to this, and so now you have this style now, which then opens up to a whole new world of options and things you can think about doing.
If people are looking to become fight choreographers, stunt coordinators, and work in that world, is that the sort of advice you'd be telling people? You know, you've got to learn about as many disciplines as possible.
Yeah, but I would also let them know, first, get good at one.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of people come in the business and they go, I want to kick like that, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. And that's great. So because you're athletic and now you know how to kick this way, but how do you move between the throwing the kick and after the kick? So, and that's the problem. The people who come in who don't have a martial arts background, they go, I want to kick the kids. So they learn how to do a trick. Okay, great. But now it looks like a trick. It doesn't look like an actual kick. So your intention, your movement looks like you're just throwing a trick, as opposed to actually the reason why you're doing this movement is for an intention of whatever reason. And you lose that once you just learn how to throw tricks. So there was a time in the film industry where it was just cool to be able to do all these spinning twist kicks and all this stuff. But then everyone, all the movies came out and everything was being done just for the sake of looking cool. And the audience has now evolved and gotten smarter. Just like when you transition from martial arts, like regular into MMA, into the ring, that doesn't necessarily work. You know, the boxers have to change their stance, otherwise they get leg kicked, you know, or they get taken down, or, you know, those things have to change. You have to adapt. When I teach choreography to any actors who have no martial arts or who have a tiny bit of martial arts movement, I always teach them the footwork first, even before the hands, because it's alien to them. So if they're not getting their footwork, and every time they move, they got to think about their foot, then they got to think about their hands, then they got to think about the other person, then they got to think about hurting the person, then they got to think about the choreo, and then where they're going to go next. And so if your footwork is good, you move naturally, then all you have to do is think about your hands. Mm. And then everything kind of falls in place from that point.
What was that thing inside you that made you think, oh, martial arts is the thing, that's what I'm going to basically dedicate, well, you've ended up dedicating your life to it. So, you know, what was that thing?
Well, my father is, you know, he's a third degree in Kenpo, and he's, I think, a third degree in Shotokan. So, you know, it was first him. Living in Canada when I was younger, there wasn't quite a big Asian presence. So I got into fights all the time, like just for being Asian. And because I'm Chinese and Filipino and some Spanish in there, so I don't look exactly Chinese either, but I don't look exactly Filipino. I just looked a little bit different. So you got into fights every day because I wasn't white. And then I moved to the Philippines for three years. And, you know, I was only 6, 7, 8, and kids can be really mean. And so because I wasn't really Filipino over there, then I got into fights every day because I wasn't dark enough. So it was one of those transition things. And then I came back to Canada. And when I was 9, and I was a little bit older now, but because I had a strong Filipino accent. Yeah. So, you know, there's more ethnics there now, but I got into fights all the time because of the fact that I had an accent. Mm. And, you know, culture diversity wasn't so prominent back then like it is now.
Yeah.
So then I got into, well, my dad put me in martial arts anyways when I first started getting into a little bit of problems when I was like, you know, like 6 years old in the Philippines. So my first week in the Philippines, I was in Manila, and some of the kids were making, I think they were making fun of me. I could speak a little bit of Filipino, and they were saying chongo, chongo, which means like gorilla, you look like a gorilla. I'm like, so I got into a fight. My first like 4 days in the Philippines. So, but I was like, hey, we're going to play some martial arts. I think it's time. So that's when it started, Kung Fu.
Ha! Chu Ching Kong, the king treated you well. Why do you betray him? What do you want? Ha!
Ha! Ha! How did the show business side sort of come into your life then, Brett?
Well, I was born in Toronto, and I grew up in Toronto mainly. Two shows that really stuck out was Hercules with Kevin Sorbo.
Sure.
And it was on a network channel where every other week it showed Hercules and then showed Vanishing Sun. And I was like, wow, that'd be really cool to be on something like that. And then, you know, I moved to Vancouver in 94. So this was like in the late 80s, early 90s when I was watching this show. And then I moved to Vancouver in 94. I didn't know anybody. I just kind of stepped off the airplane. A few years later on, I was working at a nightclub and met this girl. She was just like, hey, I'm in this agency. Would you like to be in my agency? I was like, sure, why not? And she got me in the first commercial. And I had no idea, because I was going to do my pre-meds. I was doing all my science, like human kinology, all that stuff, kinesis and everything. So I did a commercial. It was called Karate Fighters. And I loved it. And then I met some guys who are Ninja Turtles while working at the clubs. And they're like, hey, you know, we're looking for some martial artists, Asian, blah, blah, blah. Do you want to audition? And I was like, yeah. So I did. And so I got into the TV series from Fox, Ninja Turtles. I was just one of the bad guys. I was always playing like a rank warrior or Foot Clan.
Yeah.
And that kind of role. That's okay. This is what I want to do. So I finished my schooling anyways.
Yeah, I was going to say, you did finish then. You didn't drop out of school and go, I'm just going to go and join the film world.
Well, yeah, because it was very uncertain. And especially for Asians, the roles back then were such more limited, unless you're doing Kung Fu or something like that.
You've got nearly 150 credits to your name on IMDb. So you were consistently working from this is sort of the late 90s to now. Some of the titles, X2, Last Samurai, iRobot, Catwoman, Blade Trinity. These are huge, big, you know, mainstream movies. Working as a stunt performer at that time, how much prep did you get? Did you know what you were doing?
Generally, let's say on Catwoman, let's say, when we're doing that fight scene with Halle Berry. Well, I was part of the core team at the time, so we did the choreography. It was Mike Gunther, and we set it all up, and then we did the fight, and then everything's okayed by everybody. There's a lot of people that's got to go through, and then once that's done, and the doubles all know it, and we all know it, then we bring Halle in, and Halle will start working with the double and all the movements, and we just do step by step with her.
Was it mostly fights that you were doing, or would you jump in and do other types of stunts?
No, there's a lot of different things, but I mean, you know, you have guys that are specialized doing high falls, or guys that are specialized doing car driving, like cannons or whatever it is, and you never take a job that you have no experience doing. Because if you take a job, like I know a guy that took a job swimming, and he didn't know how to swim, but he gets thrown into the ocean with other people, and you know, he panicked, and he almost grabbed one of the performers and drowned them both. So,
wow,
that's definitely a no-no. Once you do something like that, you're in big problems.
Have you ever been involved on a film set where accidents have happened?
On X-Men 2, there is just a lot of chaos going on. If you watch when Pyro's on the deck and he's telling the police that he's the worst kind of mutant there is.
Yeah.
So I was one of the policemen in there when the cars go flying up, spinning, and every explosion's happening. Anyways, there's just a lot of confusion that day, and a lot of things were going on. So my line got pulled, I think, like 1 second, 1.2 seconds too late. So I got like second and third degree burns all my arms and my face.
Wow.
And that's just because there's things going on that were just causing problems, and so the communication wasn't happening there. And so that happened. Or like on Electra, I got dropped 40 feet to luckily ground earth that was all dug up and put all nicely, because there was just too much going on that was in chaos and lack of communication and things just in panic. So that happened, and you know, it basically stretched one of my ligaments, my wrist, like forever. So if I would have broke my wrist, it would have been better, because it would have healed and it would have been fine. But because it's completely overstretched, it's like taking an elastic band and you pull it too far, and then you let it back down, it's never really the same shape.
And you can pretty much pinpoint the reasons why these things do happen on film sets. And it is generally because people are rushing, and they're just not thinking, or they haven't allocated enough time towards something. Is that essentially what it boils down to?
Well, things happen. It's just, you know, we generally, especially as coordinators, we like to bring the best people for the job on board, so we know that it's going to be safe and no one's going to get hurt, whether it's performer, whether it's camera, whether it's the crew, whether it's anything. You know, like let's say a wire that's going to snap. Well, if you have a wire set up a certain way, if that snaps, it does a whip effect, and when it whips around, whatever's in the path of the whip is going to get sliced out. So riggers know this. As a coordinator, you kind of foresee this happening, so you always have to lean on the guys around you who are the best at what they do.
Being a stunt performer yourself, when you then moved into stunt coordinating, you know exactly what that stunt performer's feeling before they go and do a dangerous stunt like that. So you're a lot more sympathetic in that regard, aren't you, I guess?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Because I'm empathetic at that point, because I've been there. My approach is, like, I won't start yelling at people they can't do something on the set. But, you know, obviously they've taken the job, obviously if they've rehearsed it, obviously this and that. But if they're not comfortable, you have to let me know, because I don't want to put you in a spot where you're uncomfortable and then you're going to hurt yourself or hurt somebody. It just doesn't work that way. We have to be accountable for each other. And we're all brothers and sisters. We're all here to take care of each other. So help me, you know, help take care of you, kind of thing.
Leave and I'll spare you for the sake of Buddha.
I've got the film War down here, the Jet Li movie, as one of your first sort of second unit stunt coordinator roles. Was that quite a big picture for you, that one?
Oh, I mean, you get to work with Jet Li. I mean,
and Statham. And Statham, of course.
Yeah, and Jason Statham, yeah. And Corey Ewan. I mean,
yeah, of course, Corey Ewan.
For me, the big thing was Jet Li. I mean, as a martial artist growing up as well, he's also one of the influences in my life when it comes to martial arts, and being able to move like Jet Li or Wong Fei Hung. I mean, Jet Li, amazing. He would walk into a room like, okay, this is a choreo. It's hypothetically, I'm just saying, it's like 100 beats. Okay, he'd come in, he'd be look at it. Okay, let me see it. Once. Okay, let me see it again. He said twice. He goes, okay, I got it. And he'll step in and he'll do it. Exactly, but he'll put his jet part to it. It's like unbelievable.
Someone like a Corey Yoon, who's, you know, he grew up with Jackie Chan, this guy. So what can you glean from these people who've been doing this their whole lives?
You just watch how they, you know, at first, sometimes when you're working with them, it's kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
First of all, they're all speaking a different language. I don't speak any Cantonese or Mandarin. So
sure. It's
like, I wouldn't be able to pick it up really, but I can understand through their movement, their hand motions, or why they're doing certain things. And as I got further in the industry, because back then I was still thinking more like a performer, you know, I started thinking like a coordinator slowly. But as a performer, you look at things in a different aspect. Things when you, as a coordinator, you look at it like on a grand scale of things. Like you look at a much wider vision of things. What helped me was this guy Zhang Peng, Peng Zhang. He also doubled Jet Li as well. He was a fight choreographer, pre-wizard for Kick-Ass. Watching him work with these guys and how he moves and why the camera goes here. And a lot of times he'll sit and explain to me, the camera goes here because of this, and we'll see this movement. I don't care what the movement is. Oh, okay, great. So you start picking up the reason why they start doing certain things and why this movement will work here and why it won't work over there and why the camera movement here works and why the camera move there doesn't work. One of my mentors is Nick Powell, who's the fight coordinator and second director for like Born Identity, Gladiator, Braveheart, you know, Push and Last Samurai. So watching him was the big thing, because he really took the time to explain to me why this movement works, why this camera movement works, and all those things.
And did you bring all of that then to Marco Polo? I mean, that was such a huge show when it came out, big investment from Netflix, obviously one of their most expensive shows. You know, you brought all of that to that show?
Yeah, well, especially from Nick. Yeah, I brought a lot of that from Nick. But then I had my own flair to it.
Was that a good experience, Marco Polo? You got to work with Michelle Yeoh, so that's pretty cool.
Let me tell you how intimidating that is.
Yeah.
Here I am, talking to Michelle Yeoh and telling her, no, do the sword hit here or no, take a step here. I mean, she's also one of the icons.
Yeah, absolutely.
World. And it was like,
yeah,
Michelle, it's so intimidating telling you this stuff. She's like, no. And she was fantastic.
A joy to work with, I hear.
She is an absolute joy. She's so good. And, you know, she doesn't have a too big of an ego where you can't tell her how this. No. She'd be like, okay, if you explain to her why, or this, she'd be like, oh, okay. And as long as she can interpret it with her character, she's happy. And she just wants to make sure that the product that she's delivering is the best product possible. And that she's open to anyone's suggestions to how it can make it the best possible. As long as it's within her scope that she thinks. Yeah. And if she doesn't think it's good for her character, she'll let you know. But she's so pleasant. Like, it's a dream working with her too.
I'm terribly sorry, my lord. My disciple didn't mean to hurt you.
That whole Defenders series and, you know, with Iron Fist and Daredevil and et cetera, et cetera. That was such a kung fu orientated show, Iron Fist. You were pretty chuffed to get that role in that?
Well, I was, first of all, I was really, I was flattered that... Yeah. Ali Goss wanted to bring me over, and because she knew I could do a good job. The job itself was great. Like, I mean, to get this job was like really fantastic to represent Iron Fist. But you know, it wasn't the best experience for me. I have to say, that's one of the hardest jobs I've had to work on.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like, people getting along. Nothing was great. Everything was great on the stunt side. The crew was really good too. It just came down to like, you know, no support. Like if someone didn't want to train at all, you know, Netflix only had their agreement with Marvel was they only had X amount of input they could do. And Marvel is basically, you know, they kind of oversee all of it. So, you know, whatever happened, it was just like, before you can do this, you can't do this. And whether someone supported me on the fact that, hey, I need someone to tell this guy he needs to train. And if he doesn't, then there's nothing I can do. So what the end result, what you want, and the end result with the effort that's being put into it, was two different things. And then you're going to get what you're going to get.
But as you say, I mean, Jessica Henwick was great in that show, and she's gone on to Matrix 4 now as well, which is really, really good news. So there was some positive experiences from that show, or just generally quite a stressful thing.
Well, yeah, Jessica Henwick, she came 4 hours a day, no matter what. If she's working that day, if she's on film, she'll come before or she'll come afterwards. She'll train. Sasha Dewan, same thing. I mean, he was in, he just wanted to make sure, you know, because, you know, Davos was supposed to be, you know, an Asian guy who was like 6'2", you know, and big and muscular. So when they cast Sasha Dewan, he was a smaller dude and he had no martial arts background. So, you know, he was coming from having to work out, but his acting, he was big when he acted in that role. Sasha was fantastic. It was like when he first saw him and he gave a line, I'm like, whoa, that was great. And because of dedication to whatever he had to do, he was there 120%. I mean, Jessica Henwick, I mean, she looked great. And now she's a Matrix. Part of it, the fact that her action on Iron Fist and what she does might have helped her get that job, maybe, but she's a fantastic actor. And, you know, you have Jojo, who's helming Matrix. I mean, and you couldn't ask for anyone better right there. He's it's Jojo, man. John Flavio, it's fantastic.
Yeah. It seems like Hollywood only now are waking up to this, that in order to get really good action movies, get the guys that have been working their way from stunt performers to stunt coordinators, second unit, get the guys who know how to do the action to direct it.
It is, and, you know, it's I was fortunate on Warrior. Jonathan Tropper and Justin Lin both said to all the directors coming in, this is, okay, listen, Brett will shoot all the fights and all the action sequences. Like, you know, he'll choreograph it. He'll shoot the previous for it. He'll set it all up based off of their notes and Jonathan Tropper's notes, you know. And then as you guys agree on it, you know, I keep changing the previous depending on their notes. So I would choreograph it and I would shoot it. And then they would, you know, the Jonathan Tropper would say, well, I'll change this and do this and move that move. Okay, great. I'll change all that, reshoot it again. Okay, great. Then the director will say, well, I kind of want this to this. And Jonathan Tropper, the director, would talk and say, no, no, it stays like this or it goes this way. Okay, great. I'll reshoot it. And then that previous is it. And so on the day, because we have such limited time to shoot certain things, that, you know, we'll go shoot this and you, Brett will just take care of it all, allowing me to shoot my previous and allowing me to interpret the way that we are going to, how it's going to look. And a lot of times, which, you know, you can kind of understand, certain directors want to be able to shoot it, their own stuff, which is great. However, you don't have the time always. And, you know, there's not enough time for us to sit there on set and say, well, maybe this angle will be look good, or maybe this angle will look good, because we've already shot it. We've already done all these different angles. So we know what works, what doesn't work.
It seems like you're going this way towards directing. I'm guessing that's the ultimate thing that you're looking for, Brett. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yes.
As a director, do you have ideas? You must have projects that you want to work on, or maybe even scripts kicking around. I mean, do you have that dream project that you really want to get made?
Yeah, I do have, I think there are three scripts right now, which I'm up to direct. There's also a movie in Korea with the actor Bruce Kahn, who's actually writing the script, which is kind of like a second version to Revenger.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, so him and his HM Lee are the partners, and we have met with them, and they would love for me to come on board with them. Yeah, so there's a plethora of things that were actually supposed to be going already, but because of the corona pandemic, it's been all kind of pushed. And there's one called HKPK, which is called Hit Kick Punch Kill. It was a script written by Maninder Chana, and we kind of conceptualized it like over 10 years ago. So Adam Simon, I don't know if you know Adam Simon, he's a fantastic writer. He came in and did a pass on it, and it's amazing. So I'm going to have a big involvement in that one. You can tell it's hit, kick, punch, kill. So it's definitely action-oriented.
And do you have a type of action that you want to see? Do you think that there's a type of action that hasn't been seen yet, or something that you would like to bring to the table when you do direct?
Everything is kind of, I mean, everything you kind of, you see on film nowadays, everything's been kind of done. I mean, even when it's original, it's been done. So the only thing that I think, I don't think I can really bring anything really original or new to the world in this film, but I can put my flair on it, which, you know, it's kind of like when I trained two guys to do choreo. So when I did, let's say, Joe Taslim and Andrew Koji, hypothetically, they could have trained at the same school. They could have grew up together, had the same teacher, you know. So, but the difference, though, because based on their personalities and their body types and how they would move, that if both of them threw the exact same technique, it would look very different because of their stature, how they move, and the mood they're in, or what they're doing. So it would look different. So they both threw this kick. It would look differently how it was executed because of their personalities. So, and that's a little bit of flavor I kind of give to every character and every show that I'm on. So that if I could put them behind, like, say, a white transparent screen, and you have one guy move, and then you have the next guy move behind it, you'll know, oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, that's so-and-so, because it's indicative of their personality and how they move, so it looks different when they're fighting.
And now we'll see how good you are.
Just talking about Kung Fu as well, the TV show, I know this is coming back then onto the CW network. What's that experience been like, working on Kung Fu, bringing Kung Fu back? That's great.
So far, Olivia Liang was cast. And she comes from no martial arts background.
Sure.
So, but she is a dancer.
Okay.
And when she showed up, I mean, I was like, okay, we only have X amount of time to prep her, but she showed up and she came. Like, she was so good. She called me up. She goes, I want to train every day. So we were literally working 7 days a week. She would go do her costume, whatever this, her readings. She'd come and she'd train. No matter what, she was in there. Her and Eddie Adelio, he was a trainer there every day. And it's been another thing too. All the cast, they just want to come train all the time.
Yeah.
All the cast, all the characters, they just want to be there. They just want to come train, and they love the energy. And it was so refreshing. I mean, at the same time, it was like stressful because we had no time. But you know, trying to manage it, but I still want to keep them interested, and I want to keep going because they want to be there, which is so refreshing.
I know it's a female fronted version of the Kung Fu TV show, but I'm guessing there's got to be lots of nods back to the old David Carradine show in there as well. I mean, what can people expect from this show?
I don't know if I can really say too much.
No. I thought I'd try and ask anyway.
But I don't there so far there isn't in the first, you know, so far there isn't a lot of nods to it. I think they also might want to give it a whole new fresh perspective of it.
Yeah.
Different for the thing, but it, you know, it kind of will carry the same genre or type of what's happening when he came to America, kind of thing.
The success of Warrior, but also Into the Badlands. There was Wu Assassins on Netflix as well last year, and now the Kung Fu TV show as well. I mean, it seems like now is a really good time to be involved in the industry that you're working in. Does it feel like it's a good time for you right now, Brett?
I think it's been a good time for all martial arts genres, but I think that's been a long time coming. You know, especially Jackie Chan, I mean, with all the movies he started making in North America and stuff like that, and then Jet Li started crossing over, and it was just like, you know, the world was so new to it, but now the mainstream martial arts is throughout the whole world, whether it's UFC or whether it is that. Every type of martial arts genre is starting to becoming a little more common to more people who have no martial arts experience. So now that you can kind of do this, and people are like, oh, I know that's just a little bit jiu-jitsu, a little bit this, a little bit this, and that's coming from just regular people now. So it is a good chance, a good time for the world to be exposed to more martial arts and more things. And you know, the audience is a lot more. They're smarter, want to say?
Yeah.
They can see that if you're putting a fight together, well, that's just all just pokey fight. But even like Into the Badlands, you know, it's a lot of Chinese like wires and all that jazz. But the movements are a little more different because it has to look like it's really going to kill you or really going to hurt you or whatever it is. And so that's where things are kind of progressing because the audience doesn't want to see a bunch of people just dancing or just, you know, doing choreo or just all wire work or like that. No, they want to be in it. And for the most part, I think that with Hong Kong style in the beginning, they can't really feel the in it because it's too foreign to them. But now if they were to go back and watch them now, they would understand it more because of their understanding of the culture.
Do you still go back to old movies and do you still get inspired by old movies?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
You know, because everything nowadays, everything's been kind of done too. So when you're watching everything now, it's like, everything's done, but now they got more CG or they have more this. So
yeah,
for me, that takes it away from me. Unless like the show is meant to be like that. Like if it's a superhero show, well, it's meant to be like this. But if you're watching a regular show and like you know, if you put too much, like if you watch Born Identity now, but you put like a bunch of CG and everything in it, then it becomes less for me. Whereas I know this is, you know, grounded and deep and this is what we're doing and this, you know, kind of thing. But once I start seeing too much stuff that's unbelievable for certain movies, and I'd be like, okay, well, it takes me out of it.
Brett, listen, thank you so much for talking to me today, and best of luck obviously with all those projects. That all sounds really exciting.
Well, hopefully, crossing fingers.
Yeah.
Cross your fingers for me too, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Will do. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Ben. Take care.
Brett Chan there, really cool to chat to Brett Chan. Really enjoyed that. Thank you so much, Brett, for taking the time to talk to me. Just so many amazing projects on the horizon there for Brett Chan. Not only the new Kung Fu TV show, which sounds really exciting, but there's also that potential project with Bruce Kahn. That would be awesome. Particularly any fans of the film Revenger out there will know how exciting that is. Revenger is available on Netflix now. And if you haven't seen it, it's a great little fight movie. We wish Brett Chan all the best. It is a very strange time to be working in the movie business right now, what with one thing and another. Brett is on Instagram. His name there is at bchanworld. And he also has his website, brettchanstunts.com. His stunt team, Hits International, is on Facebook and Instagram. The name there is at Hits International. That's Hits with a Z. And there is also the website, hitsinternational.com. All links that I've mentioned on today's show will be available in the podcast description. And that is about it for today's episode of the show. A huge thank you to Jawan Dace Candice and to Brett Chan for taking the time to talk to me today. And a huge thank you to you, the loyal Foo follower who has listened all the way to the very end of this show. Thank you so much. Remember, if you do enjoy the show, then please do tell your friends. Like, share, subscribe, follow us on social media and help to share the good word of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with another new episode in the fifth season of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. In the meantime, do take very good care, stay safe, stay healthy, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.